Thank you very much, Brian. Well, as Brian mentioned in the news bulletin, it has been confirmed this morning that Germany will send Leopard 2 tanks to Ukraine and approve their re-export from partner countries. The announcement was made by the German government in a statement a short while ago, and the decision ends months of political debate in Germany, and it's the first time that German tanks will have been used on the battlefield in Europe since the Second World War. I'm joined by Kate Connolly, who's a Berlin-based Guardian foreign correspondent, and also Dr. Donna Kobachon, Professor of Politics at the School of Law and Government in DCU. And Kate, I'll come to you first, because this has just happened in the last couple of minutes. Final official confirmation after it was unofficially reported by German media late last night and this morning. So we were moving towards this point, but it took an awful lot of work and cajoling and negotiation to get the German government to this announcement today, didn't it?
Yes, that's right. Just about 25 minutes ago, the official statement came through. Those who support it say this is the result of very careful consideration by the German Chancellor, Olaf Scholz. And those who are very critical of the time it took him to come to this decision say it's come too late, that it's damaged trust in Germany. But so you've got people just basically arguing both sides of this, some saying that it was just Germans were too cautious, others saying that it's such a historic decision, as you said, just the symbolic nature of this, that it's very, very important that that they've taken the time. The reserved reaction from Kyiv this morning, which is quite interesting to note.
And Kate, you say that there are arguments on both sides, and those in Germany who were in favour of sending these tanks all along to Ukraine, they want to go even further, don't they?
Well, I mean, at the moment, I think everybody in Berlin who was in favour of this, and it is a large number of in the political elite, a lot of people are in favour of this, and also German public split on this. But nevertheless, a lot of, about half of Germans, we haven't seen the latest poll since this decision was made, but in the last couple of days, showing that half the public was behind this. But there are calls from some people saying that they will expect now for Kyiv to ask for more weaponry. There is the former ambassador to Ukraine in Germany who has said that Germany should now be prepared to offer fighter jets and submarines. I think that would be definitely at this stage being seen in Germany as going far too far. Just relief at this stage that this decision has been met, and also has been met in conjunction with Washington. I think that is seen in Germany as crucial. Olaf Scholz always pushing that this has to be a multilateral decision.
I see a reaction on Russian state media, full of condemnation of Germany for making this decision. And that was the fear, wasn't it, among some politicians in Germany, that Germany would become the target, the outlier in Europe. And that's why it was so important for Germany to have agreement on a similar deal and a similar commitment from the Americans.
Yes, that's right. I mean, the American Abrams tanks that apparently Washington said it will send, it's being seen as a bit of cover for Scholz, that he can say he's got this multilateral deal, and that the question is when the Abrams tanks would actually get there. They're very complicated. They use jet fuel. They're very expensive, complicated to run, whereas the Leopards or the Leopards, they run on standard diesel fuel. They are ubiquitous. There are lots of them in Europe, much easier. And of course, Germany, as you have mentioned there in the news, the export licenses that Germany, as the manufacturer of these tanks, has agreed to give now to countries like Spain, Finland, Greece, Switzerland, that own these tanks as well. That will just reinforce the fact that this is a European multilateral decision, which will ease pressure on Germany, as you said, that it's very, very conscious of this historical responsibility it has. But at the same time, if this does escalate the crisis, will be, the dangers of it being seen as an aggressor once again. At the same time, critics of, people saying that if Scholz did not do this, it would also, is also in danger of escalating the crisis.
And Kate, do we know how quickly those tanks could arrive in Ukraine? And there have been questions too about the condition that those tanks are in.
We understand that these particular, the 14 tanks, this, the two battalions that Scholz has said will be sent, they are more or less ready. It's far more complicated than just sending tanks. You need to send all the backup, the people to also look, you know, take care of them. To all of that needs to be sorted out. So we're looking at weeks, and we know that there are other tanks that are being they're in the ownership of the manufacturers Rheinmetall. They need to be completely and utterly overhauled, taken apart. We've been told by the CEO of Rheinmetall that they actually have mold inside them because they haven't been used for up to a decade. So tanks in differing states of repair, and also there were some concerns in Germany this morning saying because these are existing tanks that the Bundeswehr, the German military, use, that to actually let them go to Ukraine leaves Germany looking fairly vulnerable if Germany was to come under an attack from elsewhere. But at the moment, that is not being seen as the main concern in Berlin this morning.
Okay, Kate, stay with us if you can, because I want to bring in Donika O'Bacon, Professor of Politics at the School of Law and Government in DCU. And thank you, Donika, for joining us this morning. What's your reaction to the news this morning that Germany has approved the sending of these tanks, and it looks as though the US is going to do the same?
Well, it follows, you might say, the standard practice now for Germany that they move very hesitantly forward. They're almost shamed into action, but when they do act, they do make a decision. You have to remember how they started when Russia invaded. They were offering just helmets at the beginning, and Vitaly Klitschko, the mayor of Kyiv, said dismissively that what would they be offering next? Pillows. So they have been a major provider of you know, military help to Ukraine. That's often, we say, not advertised, but it is a major transformation in a way, because there had been a feeling, certainly in Ukraine, that, you know, the big question was, why haven't they been providing these kinds of tanks before? I mean, almost a year has passed. What is it necessary to kind of jolt the collective consciousness into action and provide the tanks necessary? And there was this kind of suspicion that, fear was much greater, kind of an emotion in Germany, rather than this kind of need to help Ukraine. And there was even, you might say, another sentiment that perhaps the German political elite were looking for a stalemate, a frozen conflict, and didn't really want help Ukraine to win. We're worried even about Russia losing, what that might mean. And so this kind of will allay those fears for now. But certainly Germany's neighbours, particularly those that are, you know, former satellite countries of the Kremlin in the Baltic states and Poland, will have been displeased by the way that they came to this decision, even though they will, of course, welcome the decision itself.
How widespread, Kate, if I can bring you in on that question, is fear in Germany amongst the public about this move by the government today?
Oh, well, I mean, we haven't had a poll on this, since this was made official. I mean, we had the news coming out last night via media organisations. And then this morning, as we've just said, only just now confirmed. So we haven't had a poll reading on that yet. But I mean, certainly there's huge fear in amongst Germans that, this could escalate, that Germany would be seen as the aggressor. And as we've just heard, Germany has provided an awful lot of equipment so far, but this has been carried out. As we heard, there's not been great adverts about it that this has happened, because domestically it goes down badly with some sectors of the electorate. And I mean, we've had criticism this morning, kind of expected criticism, from Sara Wagenknecht of the far left, who said it's madness that could end in catastrophe. The far right AfD say the move threatens dragging Germany directly into the war. And of Scholz's own SPD, you know, they're quite a pacifist party. Ralf Stegen from that party saying, what will come next? We are now delivering battle tanks. Will we next deliver fighter jets, ships? Are we going to be talking about sending troops at some point? And all of this filters down, and the public, you know, take this very seriously. And most people on the street have an opinion on this.
And Donika, what do you say to that? Those fears that have been expressed, triggering an escalation from Russia towards Germany for making this decision. How big is that risk?
Well, I mean, throughout this conflict, every you know, type of help that's been offered to Ukraine has been, you know, has followed threats from Russia that any help at all towards Ukraine would be a provocation and would trigger some escalation. So this is a bluff that has been called many times. But there is a fear, obviously, in Germany, and not only of some kind of, you might say, sleepwalking into a direct conflict with Russia. But that's not a fear that's shared by, you might say, Russia's nearest neighbours, Estonia, Poland, Latvia. Those, you might argue, have the most to lose in any such conflagration. And that's why, as I said, they've been quite critical of German reticence to support Ukraine militarily. It's worth pointing out as well that, you know, because we sometimes focus on German pacifism as if it's so deeply ingrained that they cannot provide any military assistance to anybody. But Germany has a huge defence industry that has very profitably exported lethal equipment to many parts of the world which are unstable, volatile, and indeed not democratic, the Middle East, for example. So many have argued that if it's willing to do that, 10 billion in German military exports last year, as I said, for profit, why can't they pro bono defend a European democracy very close to its borders?
Kate, I'm sure that issue has been raised in this debate.
Absolutely. That has been people are acutely aware of that. And I think that is one of the, you know, we see it in all sorts of areas of German life in terms of, say, environmental policy, these contradictions that we have. And certainly the fear that if Germany didn't do anything, the threat from Russia is much, much bigger for Germany than if they actually do something. But I think that, you know, there is certain respect today also from Washington, London, for the fact that it has taken Germany longer to reach this decision. And also there's not been a big fanfare made of it. We've had this very quiet statement come through. We're expecting Olaf Scholz to address the Bundestag later today about 1 o'clock local time. And it will be very interesting because he will have to speak to all these concerns in his address to the parliament.
And Donika, how important for the Germans and for Scholz was this tie-in with the United States?
Oh, absolutely. It was essential, as Kate pointed out. I mean, the American offer to Ukraine is in many respects more to provide cover, you know, for this German assistance, because Scholz, you know, was quite clear that he did not want Germany to go it alone. But the problem was that politically he was ending up to be a very lonely figure in Europe. And that's why he was pressured. But certainly he requested and would have contacted the Americans to try and get them to move. But those American tanks aren't going to arrive, as Kate pointed out, maybe it'll be a year before they arrive in Ukraine. So they're of no immediate importance. The Leopard tanks, of which there are over 2,000 in Europe, will be a far more immediate help to Ukraine. And going back again to Germany's neighbours, they have been putting huge pressure on Germany. I mean, that can't be underestimated, particularly, as I said, in the Baltic states. The three foreign ministers of Latvia, Estonia and Lithuania issued a joint statement, you know, in the days leading up to this announcement, calling on Germany, saying that Germany had a special responsibility as the leading European power to help Ukraine. And also saying that, you know, and this was put by the Lithuanian foreign minister, if we, you know, there's no win-win situation in Ukraine. I mean, you know, for the international order to survive, Ukrainians must win. And that once you accept that Russia has to lose, then all other questions are answered. And for them, it was very simple. But as Kate has pointed out very eloquently, it's a much more complicated debate in Germany.
Okay, we might talk in a moment, Donika, about what difference this will make in Ukraine. But Kate, I'm going to let you go. Thank you very much for joining us. Kate Connolly there, Berlin-based Guardian foreign correspondent. So we heard, Donika, that as you said, the tanks from the States mightn't arrive for a year. Some of the tanks that are going to come from Germany, we don't know when they're going to get into Ukraine, but also they're not in great nick. At least some of them aren't in great nick, with mould growing on the inside of them, as Kate explained. How much of a difference is this going to make to Ukraine?
Well, that's the big question, isn't it? It really depends on how many and in what condition these tanks are sent. It's very, very modest, the numbers that are being talked about at the moment. Germany talking about sending 14 tanks, Norway sending 8. Now, that's about a quarter of Norway's Leopard tanks, so it's proportionally much greater. The UK talking about sending 14 Challenger tanks. So we're talking about relatively small numbers. Volodymyr Zelensky, the president of Ukraine, who, by the way, celebrates his, well, celebrate perhaps the wrong word, but he's 45 years old today, in his nighttime address, you could see kind of the frustration. He was trying to be grateful for the assistance already received, but this kind of strong sentiment of why aren't we getting more and why aren't we getting it now? If the decisions had been made, as I said, a year ago when Ukraine was invaded to send tanks, they would already be there in large numbers, because some of them, of course, have to be manufactured from scratch. But the Leopards, this is why they're different. They're already in existence. They're somewhat old, some of them dating back to the 1970s, but they are effective. If they are given insufficient numbers, this is what the Ukrainians are saying, they're talking about a figure of 300.
Yeah.
They think that it could help them repel the Russian invasion. Otherwise, they're looking at a stalemate.
Yeah, I heard Rory Stewart, though, saying that the Russians have 2,000 tanks. You know, that puts it into context, doesn't it, what they're facing?
It does. But the Leopard tanks are considered to be of superior quality, and therefore you don't have to have numerically the same amount of tanks. If they had a sufficient number of these types of tanks, it could make a huge difference on the battlefield. Not least for the fact that the Ukrainians have proven throughout the year that they can do much more with less. So they don't need to have exactly the same numbers to repel Russian invasions as they has done in Kiev, in Kherson, in Kharkiv.
So tell me about the outlook for this year when it comes to this conflict. It's going to be, and all of the analysis says, it's going to be the critical year. Why is that so, and what are we expecting to have happen?
I think why there is a consensus that this is going to be the critical year is that the pace of this conflict is such that it's unsustainable in the longer term, in terms of the numbers lost. And we don't even have accurate statistics about how many lives have been lost. We hear that the numbers may be as high as 100,000 on both sides in the course of a year. And to put that in perspective, I mean, the Americans lost 58,000 troops in 10 years in Vietnam. The Soviets lost 15,000 troops in Afghanistan over a similar period. So these are unsustainable numbers, and therefore the question is now is who will gain the initiative in the spring, because there has been not quite certainly in the battlefield there's been a change of tactics on Russia's behalf, of course, during the winter, this weaponization of winter of bombing the energy infrastructure in Ukraine. But there's an expectation that they will go on an offensive, not least because, of course, the anniversary of the war is coming up, and they'll want to show progress in advance of that. And similarly, Ukraine will want to have any negotiations that will eventually take place to retroactively support their strong position. They want to be negotiating from a position of strength. That means regaining the territories that have been lost at various stages of this war.
Donika, thank you very much for your time this morning. Donika O'Bach on there. Coming up next, we have a fascinating person to meet, Captain Nick Sloan, who is a salvage master and president of the International Salvage Union. We'll speak to him after this.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.